his left. Tough shot. Made it. End of the line.
Bad pass. Kept away, and Indiana's got it. Up the floor to Oladipo. He will lay up. Score!
Jones. Watford for the win.
Yes! Yes!
It's Indiana. It's Indiana.
And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another episode of Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana University basketball news, notes, and nods to the past. I am your host, Jared Morris, and this episode of Podcast on the Brink, as always, is brought to you by the Assembly Call and Inside the Hall. Go to assemblycall.com/live as soon as every IU game ends and join me and my co-host for the postgame show. And if you can't listen live, but you want more Indiana University basketball podcasting in your life, then go to assemblycall.com/iTunes and you can subscribe to the Assembly Call and listen to us on demand there. And of course, go to insidethehall.com after every IU game for the minute after, for Tom Crean's reaction, for the players' reaction, and never ever miss film session with Ryan Carrazza, which usually comes out the day after the game. Always provides excellent insight, and the most recent edition, which breaks down Indiana's defense against Notre Dame, is especially insightful, so make sure that you tune in to that. Well, this is episode 103 of Podcast on the Brink, and we are going to dedicate this episode to another Indiana University victory over Notre Dame, this one from all the way back in 1970, when the Notre Dame Fighting Irish were ranked number 7 in the country, and Indiana beat them, get this, 106-103. That's right, 106-103. You know, we talked about how for this year's Indiana-Notre Dame game, it might be first team to 120 to win because those teams, you know, so good offensively, so bad defensively. It didn't quite get up into the hundreds, with the final score being 80-73, but it did back in 1970. And that was actually the year before Bob Knight took over. This was the last year of Lou Watson's tenure. It was not a particularly notable team in terms of success, as the Hoosiers went 17-7. They were 9-5 in the conference, finishing fourth. But that team is special in IU history because it featured one of the great individual seasons a Hoosier has ever had. And that was George McGinnis. The 1 year that he played in an Indiana uniform averaged 29.9 points per game. So, well, a guy like Calbert Chaney is the greatest scorer in Indiana basketball history and in Big Ten history because of the cumulative number of points he scored. No one in an IU uniform has ever scored more points per game than McGinnis, who for that one season averaged 29.9 points per game. He also was a rebounding machine, just one of the great individual players in IU history. That was the only year that he was on the team. But there were some other notable guys on that team who you may know, guys like Joby Wright, Steve Downing. But unfortunately, that year's Hoosiers not able to have any great success. But certainly one of the highlights was that 106-103 victory over Notre Dame. So a tip of the cap to those Hoosiers and to George McGinnis for his excellent freshman season. All right, everybody, on this episode of Podcast on the Brink, it's just me and Alex, and we are going to take a look back at Indiana's win over Notre Dame. What was it that sparked that big second half comeback? What are we to make of Troy Williams, who goes from good Troy to bad Troy, back to good, back to bad, seemingly all in the same possession? Is there anything to be worried about with Yogi, or did he perhaps play better than his box score numbers would indicate? Should we be concerned about Thomas Bryant's emotion? And was that victory fool's gold, or is it a potential turning point? And how will that help Indiana get off to a good start in the Big Ten if it is a turning point? Alex Bozich and I talk about all of that and more on this episode of Podcast on the Brink. All right, I'm here with Alex Bozich, founder and editor of Inside the Hall, for this episode of Podcast on the Brink. And Alex, when it was 56-40, were you, like me, kind of feeling like the season was slipping away?
Yeah, I mean, I tweeted as such that it almost seemed like Indiana was on the verge of getting run out of Bankers Life Fieldhouse, which, based on everything we talked up leading into the game and the importance of the game, was really surprising kind of how poorly they played in the first half and then to start the second half. So, you hate to call a game in December a must-win, but in a lot of ways, you know, going in, we had talked about how big the game was for Indiana, and I can't say that I wasn't surprised at what transpired next after they got down 16 points.
So let's talk about the comeback, because, you know, the first half ends, I think Indiana's down 11, and it felt like it could be worse. I mean, you know, Notre Dame misses that bunny right at the end of the half. You felt like the Hoosiers should be down 15-16, so you're feeling lucky. And so you would think, with such a big comeback in the second half, that Indiana must have just come out with their hair on fire in the second half. But that's not really what happened, because, I mean, yeah, Troy Williams came out. He played with a lot of energy and kind of kept Indiana in it by making some shots early. But I thought, for the most part, Indiana was still playing pretty listless, looked a little lethargic. Notre Dame extends the lead, and then all of a sudden, it changes. And I'm wondering if you can pinpoint what caused the change. I mean, was it just shots starting to fall and momentum built itself? Was it an adjustment on defense? Because, you know, it wasn't just shots. I mean, Indiana obviously started playing tougher. They started D'ing up more. What was it to you? Was there any single moment or occurrence to you that kind of sparked the comeback?
Yeah, I think up to that point, when they were getting down 16, it seemed like every time they got a little momentum, they just gave it right back to Notre Dame. I think they did a couple things better down the stretch. They took care of the ball a little bit better. Like you said, they tightened up a little bit on defense. You know, I don't now that I've had a chance to kind of go back and watch and also look at Ryan's film session, I don't know that there was anything magical or a huge adjustment they did defensively. I think a lot of it was just Notre Dame missed some shots. Maybe, you know, the fact that they were only playing seven guys, maybe they were a little bit tired down the stretch and IU was the fresher team. But I think once they got some confidence, made some three-point shots, and got back into the game, they didn't ever really allow Notre Dame to get momentum back. And I know it's a cliche to talk about, but, you know, Tom Crean does talk a lot about, you know, kind of seizing momentum and keeping it. And for the most part, those last 10 minutes, IU really never let Notre Dame, you know, kind of put its foot on its down on the throat, and they just kind of kept chipping away. And once they tied the game up with about 4 minutes left, it really felt like Notre Dame was beat at that point, just because of the lead they had given up, and Indiana had really had the crowd at its back by that point, and they were just the hotter team, and Notre Dame just really couldn't seem to buy a bucket. I mean, how poorly they were offensively down the stretch. You do have to give Indiana some credit defensively, but also you have to say that Notre Dame just missed some shots that they normally would make.
Yeah. Let's talk about Troy real quick, because, I mean, this performance was, you know, just such an example of the good Troy, bad Troy that we've seen over the years. I mean, you know, his first half filled with turnovers, filled with really poor shot selection, trying to do too much. And then in the second half, he was much more effective. Now, part of it was that some of the wild shots started falling, you know, as they will. But, you know, he was a monster on the glass. He had 5 offensive rebounds. He had 3 steals. And so, you know, you look at the totality, and I don't think Indiana wins that game without the contributions of Troy. And yet I've had email exchanges with people who thought Troy shouldn't have even been playing because he was playing so poorly early. And that just goes to show you just, you know, how much of a wild card Troy can be. Can you kind of put his performance into any kind of perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I hate to pat myself on the back here, but, you know, kind of going in, I know we talked about his importance in the game. I tweeted as such the morning of, kind of how big of a factor I thought he would be. It just, I didn't really see anybody on Notre Dame that had a really good matchup for him. I mean, Vesteria and Colson both have their flaws as defenders, and neither one of them really has the athleticism to keep up with them. So I kind of felt like Troy just needed to play within himself, and he would have a big afternoon. And I mean, I think it's fair to say the first half was bad Troy, and the second half, for the most part, was good Troy. I mean, for the couple of shots he made coming out of the gate in the second half were kind of wild, but they went in, like, low percentage. But that's kind of been his bread and butter, I guess, offensively. When he just drives straight at the basket, he's kind of throws up some shots that look wild, but they end up being high percentage for him. You know, I thought the key was for him was getting on the boards and kind of, you know, getting kind of asserting himself, because Indiana really hasn't been great on the glass on either end really this season. They've been a solid offensive rebounding team. Defensive rebounding is something they've struggled with, and they kind of limited Notre Dame on the second chance opportunities down the stretch too. So it's, you know, we've talked about this now for, what, 2 years going, just kind of how much of an X factor Troy can be. He can either really take you out of the game or he can propel you to a win. And what he did Saturday was more or less down the stretch, kind of put Indiana on his back and kind of carry him through the beginning part of that second half. And then down the stretch, he was fantastic. That steal he made late to kind of seal the game up. And then he went to the other end. It was like when he started dribbling the other way, it was like almost like, what are you doing? Like, kind of pull it out. Let's get the ball to a free throw shooter. But in typical Troy fashion, of course, he goes right to the basket and gets fouled and goes to the line. So I think we're past the point of reining Troy in. I think people, you know, we've talked about needing him to make the simple play, and I just don't know that that's ever going to happen. I think you're going to have to take the bad that comes with the good and hope that the good outweighs the bad.
You know, coming in, when we talked with Jake on the last episode of Podcast on the Brink, we all kind of thought that the matchup between Yogi and Demetrius Jackson would be a bit of a wash. And ultimately, you know, it somewhat was. I mean, Jackson had 6 assists. Yogi only had 2. But Yogi made a couple of really big shots late. But neither guy, you know, had a game that's, you know, going to go in his scrapbook. I'm curious your thoughts about Yogi. I mean, the 5 turnovers really kind of looked out of it to me for about 30, 35 minutes there. But then, you know, came in. The 3 that he made to you know, tie it up at 71 was huge. The 2 free throws he made late were big. But are you worried at all about Yogi? Because that's the kind of game that he usually steps up and rises to the occasion. And it was just strange to me to see him, I don't know if disengaged is the right word, but it just wasn't the same Yogi that we typically see in big moments.
Yeah, it was surprising, especially the turnovers in the first half. I mean, a couple of those were just awful. But you do have to give him some credit on Jackson. I mean, Jackson, I think, was 4 of 17 from the field. I mean, that he was really lighting the world on fire coming in, and this is offensively his worst game of the season. So I think you got to give Yogi a little bit of credit there for slowing him down. I'm not really worried about him, though. I think he's kind of proven himself to be one of IU's most consistent, if not the most consistent player on the team, kind of over a span of now going into middle of his 4th season. I think it was uncharacteristic of him how poorly he played in the first half, but he was key down the stretch too. You know, he played good defensively. He had that huge 3 that tied the game up, and down the stretch he played like the senior leader that Indiana needs him to be. So, I'm not concerned about him long term.
Okay, you know, the other guy that people do seem to be concerned about to a certain degree is Thomas Bryant. And it was a really interesting game for Thomas because, you know, he came out, picked up the 2 early fouls, and I think everybody was worried that he would then struggle to get back in the game. You know, you ran those numbers on the site last week about how he's fared much better against, you know, in the games Indiana where they haven't played top 100 opponents as opposed to when they had. But I thought everybody was really impressed, and rightfully so, with what Thomas did after that because he finishes with 10 points. You know, he had 5 boards, but I thought his contributions were even greater than that. You know, some of his buckets were really big. I mean, frankly, he and Robert Johnson kept Indiana within striking distance in the first half. And yet, in the second half, you know, we saw Thomas's emotions get the better of him and the screaming match with Tim Buckley and, you know, needing to be calmed down. Dan Dockich obviously called him out for it. I'm curious what you think about that, the emotion. You know, Fran Fraschilla, previous guest on Podcast on the Brink, I asked him on Twitter if he had a problem with Thomas's emotions, and Fran's response was no problem at all. Thomas Bryant is a young player who's still learning. Rather have to calm a guy down than check his pulse. What do you think? And is there any insight on how folks inside of Indiana feel about Thomas? I mean, are his emotional outbursts an issue or just the flip side of having such an emotional player where, you know, sometimes that emotion is a great positive and every now and then you just have to rein it in?
I don't think it's a concern really. I mean, obviously it looks bad on TV and when, you know, people are talking about it on social media, but you know, I think Fran made a good point. I mean, you'd rather have a guy who is going to be emotional and kind of passionate like he has been than a guy you have to check their pulse. So I thought Bryant was great actually on Saturday. I was concerned when he went out with the 2 fouls early, but if you would have told me from that point forward that he wasn't going to have another foul and that Zach August was going to foul out, I would have told you that was a major win for Indiana. And I think overall, really, he kind of won that matchup, and which was surprising to me. I mean, August had better numbers overall, but he also played more minutes and he also fouled out. So I think it can be a big boost for Bryant going forward, because there's no way he wasn't aware of how poorly he played against Duke, UNLV, and Wake Forest, and IU's three losses. And I think the story kind of would have been the same thing if they would have lost Notre Dame, you know, that Thomas kind of came up empty in a big spot for Indiana. But he kind of flipped the script and just kind of stayed within himself. I mean, if you look at his numbers this year, he's been ridiculously efficient at the rim. He's finishing 75% of his twos. I mean, that's really, really good. His offensive rebounding numbers have been strong. His block percentage is on its way up. So it's, I think the emotional stuff, does he need to kind of maybe keep it in check a little bit more? Yes, but that's kind of a difficult thing to tell a guy to, like, you know, if it's really just coming out spur of the moment, it's in a way unpredictable. As long as he's not negatively affecting his teammates, which I haven't really seen any examples of guys, you know, reacting too negatively to kind of what he's been doing. You obviously don't want to see him yelling at a coach, but I think in the heat of the moment, that happens a lot of times in big time athletics. We may not have seen it as much in previous years, but also we haven't really seen a lot of passionate play from Indiana these past two seasons. So I think to me it's nice to have a guy out there that you can tell really cares and is really kind of hanging with every moment throughout a game. And it was awesome to see him on the bench, kind of his reaction when they tied the game up, and just how much of a cheerleader he is over there. It was pretty cool to see.
Do you think IU fans fully appreciate how valuable Robert Johnson is? I mean, obviously, you know, his three-point shooting has been ridiculous this year. He's making 57.5% of his three-pointers, which is remarkable. You know, still turns the ball over a little bit too much, but that's going down. His assists have gone up. Defensively, obviously, he's been very good. And, you know, like I said earlier, I mean, he and Thomas Bryant basically kept Indiana in that game early when, like you said, it looked like they might get run out of the gym. You know, he finishes with 17 points, 3 assists, 3 boards, 2 blocks. You know, and those are the kind of numbers that we're starting to see from him. Do you think Hoosier fans fully appreciate what he brings to this table on both ends of the floor?
I think if they don't, then they're mistaken. I mean, he's been incredible this year. I mean, his numbers, his turnover rate is still high, but it's better than it was last year. His free throw percentage is kind of the one thing that's kind of sticking out right now that is not being too good, but you don't really worry about that when a guy's making almost 58% of his threes. We talked, you know, kind of in the preseason about him simplifying his shot, and you never know with that kind of stuff if it's really something that's going to really change anything, because you hear all these different guys trying different things. I mean, you know, remember when Stan Robinson changed his shot last year and everyone wondered if he'd be a better shooter? He wasn't. With Rob Johnson this year, you know, the big emphasis was on kind of not jumping as high on his jump shot and kind of becoming more consistent in his landing spot. And so far, his three-point shooting percentage is up almost 20%. The thing I like about him is he plays like a veteran. I mean, he doesn't obviously the turnovers you like to see come down, but he doesn't play like a guy ever who's kind of caught up in the moment. His expression on his face is pretty much the same at all times. He plays like an upperclassman, and he doesn't need the ball in his hands to be effective. I mean, he's been great in spot-up situations this season. He plays defense. I made the argument weeks ago that he should be playing more, and I think we're going to continue to see more of him as the season goes along and see his minutes increase, because even going back to the preseason, I think ultimately Indiana's best upside with this group is to kind of go with the three guards and Troy Williams and Thomas Bryant, and that's kind of what they've done. And I'm pretty sure that Indiana, when Robert Johnson starts, has not lost a game yet. So there's another argument to keep him in the lineup.
Very nice. All right, let me throw a few numbers here at you real quick. All right, 9th, 40th, 23rd, and 7th. Those are Indiana's national ranks the last 4 years in offensive rebounding. And, you know, you look at the reasons why Indiana was able to win this game against Notre Dame, I think you have to start with the 20 offensive rebounds that Indiana grabbed. I mean, Indiana rebounded over 50% of its own misses. And in fact, six of those rebounds came off the bench, you know, where guys like OG Anunoby and Colin Hartman, you know, came in and really got some timely rebounds, some big plays. And it strikes me that this may be Indiana's overlooked strength. You know, we talk a lot about the offense and the pace and the shooting and the ball movement, but I think we overlook just how good and consistent this program has been at offensive rebounding. Can you speak to how important that is for this team and maybe what it is about, you know, how Coach Green coaches or just the players and their mentality that makes this such a good offensive rebounding team?
Yeah, I mean, you make a great point there because I think their offensive rebounding percentage this year is right around 40. Is that 40, accurate?
Yeah, 40.4 right now.
And you look at their three losses, they had 30.6 offensive rebounding percentage against Wake, 25 against UNLV, and then low 30s against Duke. So there's some correlation there. When they're at their best, they're shooting well from the outside, and then they're crashing the boards. And it's definitely how they're coached. I mean, if there's one thing that has really carried over in Crean as a coach from what he learned from Tom Izzo, I think it's the rebounding aspect of, you know, kind of getting in there and crash the glass. You look at a team like Michigan that's really good offensively, but doesn't emphasize offensive rebounding at all. It's just that, you know, I think it speaks a lot to the aggressiveness, the way that Tom Crean wants to play, and the guys he recruits into his system kind of have that mentality. Troy Williams is a perfect example of it. Oladipo was another guy that really wanted to be aggressive and crash the boards. Cody Zeller. I mean, the list goes on. So I think a lot of it is how they're coached and the guys he wants to fit that system, because it's obviously a huge emphasis, and it's something that has to continue, because when you get into the Big Ten, you get in these road environments, your shots aren't always going to be falling from the outside. You have to find out other ways to score, and Indiana's going to have to continue to be efficient, getting second chance points and crashing the board. So I think it's huge going forward, and I don't think it's any coincidence that the games where they haven't hit the offensive boards well that they've lost.
All right, so before we look ahead to Big Ten season, because we got a few questions about this, I want to ask you the $64,000 question. And I've tweeted this out. You know, I saw Aiken Hoosier posted about this in the Inside the Hall forum. A lot of people have been asking this since IU's victory over Notre Dame. And that is, you know, with the sobriety now of a few days to kind of reflect on this, and it was an incredible comeback, you know, 17-2 run to end the game. But it was, you know, 6-7 minutes followed by 30-some pretty listless minutes from Indiana, and probably not a sustainable formula for winning against good teams. So let me ask you, was this victory to you the sign of a turning point, something this team can really build on? Or was it more fool's gold that could get this team into trouble if they think they can play, give that kind of overall 40-minute effort and just rely on pulling it out in the end against a good team?
Wow, that's a tough. I don't necessarily see it as a turning point. I see it as a disaster avoided, from the standpoint of, if they would have lost this game, the negativity would have been off the charts. They would have no really win to fall back on in the non-conference season that would belong on an NCAA tournament resume. I think it can be a building block if they can get on a run here and win some games to start the Big Ten season. Because it's so favorable at the front end, they really have to take momentum. And I mean, they haven't lost since the Duke game, so, and they've—I don't think they're going to have a game now where they're not favored for at least another month. I mean, I would kind of look at it as maybe going into the Wisconsin game on the road would be the next game where they're going to probably be a decisive underdog, and they may not even be a huge underdog there based on how Wisconsin's played at home so far. So, I mean, I think it can be a turning point, but they have to, you know, keep the momentum going and learn how to put the effort together for a full 40 minutes. I mean, I still really haven't figured out why they played so poorly the first half and why they came out so lethargic in the second half. I mean, that's maybe a question to address at some point. But Colin Hartman said post game, you know, that they knew they had played terrible. Rob Johnson said that you know, some fans probably turned the game off. And, you know, to me, it's still kind of troubling, the fact that in such a huge spot and a game that they knew they needed to win, that they came out and played that way. But it's also hard to criticize them for having the biggest comeback in the Tom Crean era. So I don't necessarily think it's a turning point for sure, but I also don't think that it's fool's gold if they can kind of build on it and figure out how to sustain that effort more consistently.
Yeah, disaster avoided is a great way to put it. Are you confident going on record saying that Indiana will beat Kennesaw State?
I am confident on that one.
Okay,
I think Priller's minutes might be up tomorrow.
So if Indiana beats Kennesaw State, the Hoosiers are 10-3 heading into conference play. All right. They open conference play at Rutgers, who has a KenPom rating 26 spots lower than Austin Peay right now, which Indiana beat 102-76. Indiana then follows that up with a road trip to Nebraska, who just lost to Samford. That game was at Nebraska, right?
Correct.
Okay, so those are IU's next three games. And again, those first two Big Ten games on the road. So clearly Indiana is going to be the favorite, the prohibitive favorite in both of those games. And no matter who the opponents are, starting out Big Ten play with a couple of road wins would be huge. Now, I'm not ready to, you know, put those in the victory column yet, because I don't think this team has earned our trust when it goes away from home, although that win over Notre Dame was a nice little start. But, you know, I still want to see this team do it before I totally buy into it. But you bring up such a good point. You know, you got that Rutgers game, the Nebraska game. Then it's home to Wisconsin and Ohio State. Now, Ohio State, that game's looking a little tougher now after they've beaten Kentucky. But those are still games where you look at the KenPom ratings, and he gives Indiana a 77% chance to beat Wisconsin and 80% chance to beat Ohio State. Then it's 70% at Minnesota, 88% against Illinois at home, 79% at home against Northwestern. And then you get to that Wisconsin game at Wisconsin, where that's currently predicted as a 72-71 Wisconsin win. Now, none of us should have confidence going into that Wisconsin game. I think, again, let's win on the road at Wisconsin before we believe it's going to happen. But you look at now this runway that Indiana has to get off to a good start in Big Ten play, and we could be sitting here on January 26th, you know, talking about a team that's 17-3. What kind of confidence do you have that Indiana is going to be able to do that and not stub their toe with a couple of losses here to start out Big Ten play?
I wish I had a good answer for you, but I really have no idea what to expect. I mean, I look at these next three, obviously the Kennesaw, you kind of go ahead and put that in as a penciled in win. I think the Rutgers game is one. I mean, they dominated Rutgers there last year. That's a game they should win. The Nebraska game is a little trickier for me because I feel like Nebraska has had success in the Big Ten in that building in past years. I don't think they're as awful as they showed last night. They're not a good team, but Indiana hasn't always beaten average or even mediocre Big Ten teams on the road. So I think those first two games are obviously huge. And then if you can come home, play Wisconsin on January 5th, ESPN, I think it's Super Tuesday on ESPN, without having a loss in more than a month. I mean, I think at that point it's fair to say you have a little bit of momentum on your side, and then it could be a snowball effect if they can, win those two at home, and then go to a place in Minnesota who's already lost a ton of home games this year, not a very good team. I mean, you can't really draw up a more favorable schedule, and I think Indiana's got to take advantage of it because the back half of the schedule is tough, and so if you stub your toe a couple times up front, you're going to be digging yourself a bigger hole. I mean, even with 10 non-conference wins, counting the Kennesaw game, I think Indiana, to get a seed, anything better than a 6 or 7 seed, it's probably going to need to win at least 11, 12 Big Ten games, if not more, to get higher. So you can't really overstate how important the start is. I mean, Indiana's got to take care of business. Not every season is going to have such a favorable road in the Big Ten. So, you look at the schedule this year, the Big Ten road games, they've got, besides Rutgers and Nebraska, and Minnesota, they've also got road games at Illinois and Penn State. I mean, there's 5 road games where you feel like they should have a really good shot of winning those. So they need to take care of business there for sure.
You know, the schedule is so interesting this year for Indiana, specifically in the Big Ten, because overall it is a relatively easy schedule, right, in comparison to what other teams play. And we've talked a lot about that. And yet, you know, I also look at it as it could be a bit of a curse in disguise almost for two reasons. You know, one, because Indiana only has the one win over Notre Dame and not a lot of other non-conference wins to hang their hats on, it could end up being a negative that Indiana doesn't have as many opportunities in Big Ten play to get a big win if they stub their toe in games that they should win, right? They won't have as much opportunity to make up for a toe stub loss. And the other thing is that the way this schedule sets up is it could play into the continued narrative of Indiana starting strong and fading. And that may not be as much a blight on the team as simply the schedule, because you look how it ends. You know, you've got, you know, starting February 11th, home against Iowa, at Michigan State. Then you've got Nebraska at home, but then it's Purdue at home, at Illinois, at Iowa, and home against Maryland. I mean, that's four games to end that are all going to be tough. Illinois, just because that's a tough building to play in. You know, what do you think Indiana needs to do here in Big Ten play for, you know, for it to kind of reduce some heat on Tom Crean? Because I think one thing that fans have wanted to see is the team playing better at the end of the year. They may be this year, but it may not necessarily reflect itself in the record.
Yeah, I don't know that. I mean, I hate to say this. I think that the heat on Tom Crean is not something that's going to be alleviated in the regular season. I think what people want to see is a success in March. I mean, that's ultimately kind of what people are looking for. They want to see some kind of proof that this team can go make a deep NCAA tournament run and not fade down the stretch like you talked about. It's interesting that you brought up, you know, kind of how the schedule ends, because I kind of think the same thing. I mean, it's not really, I don't know that it's going to be necessarily indicative to how Indiana's playing if they lose some games down the stretch, because, I mean, their schedule, as you mentioned, down the stretch is ridiculously difficult. You wouldn't expect them to go to Michigan State and win. You wouldn't expect them to go to Iowa and win. Illinois, as you said, has always been a tough place to play. So I think they need to win 12 Big Ten games and get, you know, a seed conducive to advancing in the NCAA tournament, because the last thing they need is an 8 or 9 seed and having to play a 1 seed the second game, because I just think that's a recipe for not getting out of the first weekend of the NCAA tournament. And to kind of get that favorable seed, they need to set themselves up to, you know, have at minimum, I feel like, 12 Big Ten wins, and then if not, pick off a couple more. And getting those wins at the beginning of the season can hopefully build them some confidence that they can go on the road and win a game or two that maybe nobody expects them to, or you know, hold serve at home against the really elite teams like a Maryland to end the season.
So let's see. Indiana won. Purdue lost. Kentucky lost. Last week was pretty good for Indiana fans. Can you possibly want anything else for Christmas after Christmas came a weekend early?
Yeah, I was you know, I don't want to hijack the podcast too much and give Purdue too much credit, but I was actually shocked that they lost to Butler. I mean, I didn't think there was any way that Butler was going to be able to slow down Isaac Haas and A.J. Hammonds, and they did. And, you know, Caleb Swanigan went off anyway, but Butler just kind of continues to, even with, you know, with Chris Holtman at the helm, continues to kind of defy logic, but, you know, just winning games that no one expects them to, and they've got something going there. And I think the overall, the Crossroads Classic this year was maybe the best it's been. I mean, the game between Indiana and Notre Dame, just the drama that had, and then to have two teams like Butler and Purdue kind of cap it off. I still think Purdue's really good and is going to have a lot of success this year, but I was really surprised to see that. And then the Kentucky game, I mean, that, like you said, I mean, that kind of changes people's perception maybe of Ohio State a little bit coming into Bloomington for that fourth Big Ten game. Maybe puts a little bit more pause on putting that one on the ledger as a potential win, just based on how well Ohio State played. But, you know, Thad Matta's proven himself over the long haul to be a really good Big Ten coach, and I think it would have kind of maybe been foolish to count them completely out. But You never expect Kentucky to kind of lose one of those games, those neutral court games on the big stage, because that's kind of how they build their schedule to kind of set themselves up to look good in those scenarios.
Yep. Well, Alex, thank you for your time. It was a huge thrilling win for Indiana against Notre Dame, and now we hope the Hoosiers can, again, use it as a turning point, use it as a building block, and hopefully we're not looking back on it later in the season and saying, well, that was just a little blip, but, you know, it's still been the same old Indiana after that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, there's no shortage of storylines as we head into the Big Ten season, because, like you said, if we're sitting here a month from now talking about a 17-3 Indiana team, then I think they've kind of flipped the script on the season and have a chance to really kind of move forward and have some positive feelings about the program and the team. Whereas, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I think a lot of people thought this season had a chance to go down the toilet pretty quickly. So it's going to be interesting to follow over the next month, and I'm definitely looking forward to covering it all.
Yep, and hopefully, Podcast on the Brink listeners, you don't hear from us again. The only way that you would hear from us is if Indiana somehow loses that Kennesaw State game and we have to do an emergency episode to discuss that fallout. But as we discussed earlier, I think we should be pretty safe. So I wish everybody a happy holidays and a Merry Christmas, and the same to you, Alex.
Yeah, make sure you come back, check next week. I think we're going to have a podcast that everyone's going to enjoy. We're going to put each other on the spot with some Big Ten predictions, and I'm sure at the end of the season we're all going to look back and say what were we thinking on a couple of them, but it'll be a lot of fun. So make sure you check back next week for next week's episode as well.
Yep, we'll talk to you all then.